This is Trina Worcester of Berwick Secondary College interviewing Alice Barker of Berwick on the 14th of September 1990 for her HSC Australian History option. Miss Barker, how long have you lived in Berwick for?
I came to Berwick in 1917, the year before the First World War ended, when I was a little girl. My father was the headmaster of the Berwick State School, and I lived down in that house they pulled down. Remember a house on the corner of Brick House? They pulled down a couple of years ago.
At the bottom of Brisbane Street?
For 22 years, and then my father retired and built this house, and I've lived here for 50 years.
How old were you during the Second World War?
Hmm?
How old were you during the Second World War?
About 30, when it started.
What was Berwick like then?
Quiet little country town with lots and lots of open paddocks, and everybody, just about everybody, had a cow in the backyard and a lot of chooks, and there were 500 people between the Cardinia Creek down there, as far as Mary Warren, and out as far as Clyde, and up as far as Harkaway. Now there are, what, might be 50,000 people.
Probably more than that.
500 there were when we came.
Were most of the families involved in the war in some way?
Well, all the young boys went that were able-bodied, and there were no young people, and the girls went into the land army and the WAF or whatever it was, you know, the Women's Army Service, and the Women's Land Army, they went out to do work on the farms. Girls help with milking and carting hay and doing things and driving tractors that the boys had done, because they'd been called up.
What was your involvement?
Hmm?
What was your involvement?
Well, I wasn't involved in anything. I sat here like a lady and kept house for my father, because I couldn't get out to do things.
What kind of services were there for? Did the locals do for soldiers that were at war?
I suppose the Red Cross, and the Red Cross was always very active, you know, had extra meetings, and I was calling for money for this, for that, for helping and that, and the local, a lot of women used to make camouflage, I think that was through the Red Cross, camouflage nets to put over the guns and things. They were made of greeny sort of, dark greeny khaki, thick string, not as thick as my finger, and they used a great big coarse crochet hook. And they made these, just kept on going like that, and then come around and sort of made them like that, and these were thrown over the guns or anything, and from the air that it blended in with the ground and the greeny colour of any little bushes and shrubs. They used to do that. And then some of the ladies used to sort clays, old clays, for some for pulping and some for reselling to get money. Some people used to send dirty clays they didn't wash, dirty old socks and smelt, and awful things. Like when people used to wear corsets, stays with whale bands all over them, and somebody sent a dirty, greasy pair of them. I suppose they pulp it all. I don't know, I probably threw it out and burnt it. I mean, people got no idea what they wanted. But if you had any old sheets and clean white rags like that, they'd wash them and tear them to bandages for the Red Cross, for the hospitals, because they were short of all kinds of, after a few years, of rags and clean rags, for like old sheets for hospitals and for dressing and for... what else did they do? They had little concerts and things to get money, and a fete. Every few months they'd have a fete, you know, stalls and sell things, get some money. It was great on the money.
Did they used to sell send food parcels and that sort of
thing?
Yes,
food parcels, yes, and get money for that. And, you know, people gave money for that. We gave money for that. But not to, but I think some of those little fetes and afternoons, teas and whatnot, they used the money to buy those food parcels. Yeah. And then as the war came on, we had coupons for butter, sugar, tea and coffee, meat, and clothing. But you'd get, we were allowed, I think it was 6 ounces of butter. That had to last you 4 weeks. 6 ounces and half a pound, a little bit of butter like that, and that had to last you for 4 weeks. Sugar was about 2 ounces a week. I mean, you couldn't have any sugar to make cakes much. Mm. But we were all right in a way, because my father and my cousin and myself, we didn't take sugar in our tea or coffee. And, you know, we managed quite well, but you couldn't be extravagant. And, sometimes my cousin would want to make jam, and we couldn't have enough sugar. You only had enough for, like if you wanted to stew a bit of fruit or make an odd cake, or that was a bit hard. Butter was not so hard for us, because two of our friends had cows, and every now and again give us a pat of homemade butter, and one of them drank a lot of tea and we didn't drink a lot of tea, and she gave us all her butter coupons and we gave her all our tea coupons. Which we weren't supposed to do, I think. We weren't supposed to hear us about that. But I mean, but then out here, you see, we didn't suffer much, because plenty of fruit and vegetables which weren't rationed. And we had our own chooks, and we had eggs, and we could kill a chook occasionally. For meat. But it was very hard on people living in the city who had no chooks and no room and nobody to give them an odd pat of butter from a cow.
Did you have sufficient clothing?
Yes, but the girls that worked out, I did, because I didn't go out. It didn't matter if I was shabby and sat home, because I couldn't go out anyway, it didn't matter. But the girls that were working in offices in Melbourne and that, they were short of clothing coupons. I used to give mine to a friend that used to go out. And the girls painted their legs because they couldn't afford to buy stockings, couldn't afford the coupons. You know, there's 8 coupons or something for a pair of stockings. And they painted them with, I don't know what dye, so you could buy from the chemist. And you could see the, you know, they painted them all so they looked like fawn stockings. Got out in the weather and got a splash and they went all queer.
That'd be interesting.
Mm. Yeah. What else happened? Because, you see, the married women took those jobs when to help out. Mm. And that's why they'd never had jobs like that before. And that's how now all these young married women, they park their children in a crèche or something, and the jobs, they like that work. It was good, and they got out, and out of the house, they weren't housebound, and they kept it going over throughout the whole world. It wasn't done before the war. If a married teacher got married down at the school or wherever, they were dismissed immediately. Your husband kept you. It wasn't done. And they didn't have a lot of money, but money didn't matter as much. Money went a long way in those days. But, you know, I think it's better now that the married women get out and see a bit of life, and that, not all the time, if they've got little children. It's sad if the children go home and there's no one there, isn't it?
What happened when the men all came back from the war? Did they just go back to their housework?
More people came out after the war.
Yeah.
Australia opened its doors, and we got a lot of, first of all, English migrants, and then a lot of the Italians and Dutch and so on. and we doubled our population in 2 or 3 years, and there were more jobs for everybody.
Did you notice much of a change in Berwick?
Hmm?
Did you notice much of a change in Berwick after?
Yes, a bit. A few more houses went up, not a lot, and the men that came back, because some were killed, hmm. and some were hurt and couldn't take their jobs. But the ones that came back here in Berwick got their jobs back, the ones that were fit,
mm.
you know, in the shops and in the bank and in the down at the school, young teachers, they all got their jobs back. And of course the Land Army girls, they did a good job.
What were they?
They were like farm labourers. They did all kinds of jobs.
Mm.
Heavy jobs, like...
Just young girls?
Young women, yes. Yeah, you know, about 18 to 30, say, roughly. And they were very glad to do it. A couple from here went up near Stour. There was a Miss Kidman, and she... Her brother went to the war. He was pretty high up, a major or something, was killed. And she and her brother had managed this property, and she had a series of Land Army girls, and 2 or 3 from Berwick that stayed with her for some years. I think a couple of years after the war, too. She had quite a big property there. I think she got others as well. She had something like 6 or 8 army girls. I lived in a quarters that had been men's quarters, and helped her run this great big property that had sheep and wheat and stuff growing on it. You know, they worked just like the men, and they loved it. I think when it was very heavy work, she would get older men to help them.
Yeah.
But they humped great sacks of chaff on their backs and all kinds of things, and helped with the milking. And if they were, 2 of them could ride horses, and they'd round up the sheep, and just like the men. Very hard.
Did most of the young people in Berwick go to the war? The young men?
Yes.
What was their attitude? Mm. Were they keen to go?
Huh?
Were they keen to go?
Of course they were, yeah. Mm. So it was an adventure.
Mm.
War is a dreadful thing. But young people think it's going to be, they mightn't nowadays, but they think it's going to be a great adventure, and it's a horrible thing, and nobody wins it, and it's awful. You know, they blast everything to bits, and people and properties and animals and everything. Yeah. But Berwick, then, when they were coming back, used to give them little welcome home parties, a series of 6 or Berwick and district, like Parkaway and Beaconsfield, and they'd come here to the hall, and they'd give them a party an evening, and welcome them home. I think that's about all they did. And then they gave them their jobs back. They had a couple working for Lovebridge's and went. And they gave back. The coupons and the Land Army girls and the camouflage nets and the blackout, and that's about it. Oh, what else do you, what other things can you think of?
No, I don't really know. I wasn't here at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know. I wasn't here at the time.
I know, but I mean, did you see, screws and nails, and those are sort of essential things. They're very hard to get. You'd only catch them if some shop had a few on hand and had something over.
Mm.
Ordinary house building, and that was all held up. Fortunately, my father and my cousin and myself, we moved into this house just 1 month after war broke out. And it was built, you see, just before things got scarce. So we were very lucky. People couldn't build houses. There was no...
I suppose there wasn't really builders to build them either.
No, and see, all those essential things like the wood and the nails and the screws and the things were sent to make shelters and places for soldiers everywhere, anywhere. And when the Japs came in, of course, all the American soldiers came out here. And we had thousands of American soldiers in Melbourne. And we were very pleased to see them when they came, because we felt very isolated and alone. And then the Member of Parliament at the time, Mr. Curtin, who was a very good Labour man, he wrote to Mr. Churchill to ask for all our men back, because they'd been sent to the Middle East. And he had a great job to get them back, but we got them back. Here to help defend Australia. And then the Japs came down on those islands and they got us about as far as the side of New Guinea there. And by that time the war was, they were beaten and sent back. But it was touch and go. If you know, with the Japanese, because there's millions of them and only a few of us to hold Australia if they'd come down. You know, our great big coastline, you couldn't put one soldier every 10 miles around it, really. They could have come down, we're jolly lucky. Two or three little midget submarines got into Sydney Harbour. They were found on the shore. With just one man in to try and blow up the harbour. So they were found and the poor man was killed and made them try again. We've had six little ones got in and they were all killed. But war is a dreadful thing. It was called blackout paper, which was thick brown paper tarred with black tar on one side. And you put it onto a blind roller, and hung it up. In the daytime you could run it up. And we took down the ordinary roller blinds and put these other ones up and had them over the ends of the windows about that far so we wouldn't send a gleam of light out. And we were asked not to use too much electricity, just have one light in one room and then go to bed in the dark, or go to bed with hardly any light. Not to be extravagant with it, because we didn't know at the beginning of the war what was going to happen and what would be scarce and what wouldn't be, and so we were all asked to save anything we could, not to be extravagant with anything. And crept around, but after the war, got further away, you could see it wasn't going to help us hurt Australia too much. They didn't do all the... They weren't as strict with the blackout. See, all the lights in the street were out. You had to grope your way out, around. My father went round one night to a farewell to the Presbyterian minister who was going as a padre to the war, and he had some cakes, and there was a great big drain in the corner and he fell into it. He came home very disgusted, and my cousin who was living with me said, change your trousers and you hope the cakes are all right. So he changed his trousers and went back to them. It's very awkward in the dark, isn't it? Somebody else might be able to help you more.
No, thank you very much for your time and effort.